Aren't you glad that he has got you and me, brother and sister, in his hand? Aren't you glad that having the moon and the sun and the woods and the water in his hand is the great prelude to that enormous creative act in which he made you in his own image, and in which he placed us into the palm of his hand? Aren't you glad that your life is not outside of the will of a sovereign and good God who has you in his hand? Aren't you glad? Say yes, I'm glad. And you see, what we've been talking about last week and now again this week is really all about that gladness. It's about the gladness that comes, a Sabbath gladness, a Lord's Day gladness that comes when we say, this one day out of seven is to be a day in which I mark the gladness of my heart that the Lord has done this remarkable thing, that he has created this world and he created me and it is all in his hands. And that he has set one day out of seven to mark his lordship over all of this creation. As one great theologian of the turn of the century, B.B. Warfield, said, he who needed no rest in the greatness of his condescension rested from the work which he had creatively made, that by his example he might woo man to his needed rest. God made us for himself, as we know. We're restless until we find our rest in him. But then he's given us a day to mark out, among others, that our rest is in him. Our lives do belong to him. We were made for him. And as we saw last week, he does this by saying to us that this day, this Sunday, this Lord's Day, this one day out of seven, is a day which belongs to him. It is the Lord's Day. And therefore, all our thinking about this day, all of our thoughts about what we do or don't do, all of the decisions we make that might seem at times quite detailed, all of that really is shaped by the overarching umbrella idea that it is the day that belongs to him. The day that we acknowledge him to be the creator and sovereign Lord of our lives. But then, as is always the case in what the Lord claims for himself, he gives back to us to be our delight. So this day is not just his day. It is his day. It is the Lord's day, but it is also the day of our delight. And this is where we left off last week when we saw from Isaiah 58 these marvelous verses. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing your pleasure, that which you please, on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight, and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord. That's a promise. A promise. If you do something, then something will happen. That's a promise. And if you find your delight in the Lord on his day, that is, if you mark this day as his and you seek your delight in him on this day, then you will, he says, he promises, you will find joy in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride on the heights of the land. What a marvelous expression. I'm not even sure I know what it means, but isn't it marvelous? To ride on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob, the mouth of the Lord has spoken. And so this day, This day is to be marked out, not by a legalism, a slavish kind of legalism to specific commands and orders and routines that are imposed upon us. But neither, on the other hand, is it to be a day that I simply do whatever I want to do with. No, it is the Lord's day, and therefore we look to Him and to His Word to find out what we can, cannot, should not do on this day. And in doing so, in pursuing that, in pursuing the Lord on His day and His truth on His day, we find our delight, our joy. And therefore we say, what does the Lord want? Well, He wants us to mark it as His day. He wants us to mark it as a delight. In other words, He wants us to call this day a holy day. Holy means separate, set apart, different. And as I just tempted you and tantalized you last week, that means three things. Something about our work, something about our worship, and something about our wonder. And the bulletin cover that you have before you, done by our member Steve Brown, what a wonderful portrayal of these three ideas. Our work, our worship, our wonder before the Lord. Something about our work, first of all. To call the Lord's day holy is to set it apart from other days. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 8, it says that we are to keep the Sabbath holy. And then in verses 9 and 10, it defines what that means. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a day of Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, neither you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. In other words, what is to circumscribe that day is defined as a particular kind of cessation from labor, the labor which properly characterizes the rest of the week. No one in the covenant household is supposed to work. No family member, no servant or employee, no guest, no animal. And then verse 11 gives us the reason for the ending of this labor on one day. For in the 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but He rested on the seventh day. And therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it separate, holy, different than the other days. God Himself rested from His creative work. God establishes the pattern of a six-in-one rhythm to our weeks. The pattern of 6 days of work and one day of rest. The warp and woof of creation itself points to this needed rest for us. The Sabbath, Jesus said, remember from Mark 2 last week, was made for man. Man needs a Sabbath rest physically, mentally, spiritually. But left to ourselves, it's not at all clear that we will discover our need for that rest, is it? Left to ourselves, most of us, if we're honest, are unbalanced. We either fall off into workaholism on the one extreme or to unbridled leisure on the other extreme. And our society is clearly plagued with those two extremes. Overwork, overplay. But God, you see, worked and He rested. And then He worked again. And then He rested again. And in a pattern that He established, He intends us to follow. We rest because God rests. We rest because Jesus rested. And our rest, like the Father's and the Son's, is not cessation from all activity. My Father is working until now, Jesus said, and I myself am working. God the Creator and Jesus the only begotten general contractor of all of creation do not stop on the Sabbath day upholding the world or ruling the universe. And we too do not end works of necessity, those things needed to maintain life, or works of mercy, as we said last week, those works which are needed for the care of people. Perhaps particularly the whole medical profession is in view there. We don't stop working. Sunday's not a day of idleness or inactivity, but it's a day in which the rhythm should change. It should shift, and priority should be given to other things. And the underlying principle here is that we must honor God with the use of our time. That's the underlying principle. Look at it this way. Each of the commandments calls upon us to see something in our lives that we are to bring before the lordship of God Himself. So in the first commandment, no other gods before me, we honor God by giving Him exclusive loyalty. The second commandment, no images, we honor God by our thoughts about Him, as we said several weeks ago. Third command, taking the Lord's name in vain, we honor God with our words. And the fourth command, this one, we honor God with our time. A rhythm of toil and rest. 6 days for work and other pursuits, crowned with 1 day for worship. God's claim to Sunday is a reminder of what? It's a reminder that all of our time belongs to Him. And so the Apostle Paul says, look carefully how you walk, making the most of your time because the days are evil. How do we do this? Well, as J.I. Packer has reminded us, not by frenzied rushing about, trying to pack a quart of activity into a pint pot of time. You really have to be British to say that, don't you? A pint pot of time. A common present-day error, Packer says. But by an ordered lifestyle in which, within the set rhythms of toil and rest, work and worship, due time is allotted to sleep, family, wage earning, homemaking, prayer, recreation, and so on, so that we master time rather than being mastered by it. Do you see? The Lord of all of time wants us to be vice regents over our time. We are to command our time and not be commanded by it. And yet how many of us go about all of our lives saying that we are the victim of not having enough time? And I would propose to you that one of the major reasons why we do not have enough time in our lives is that we do not honor the Lord's right way of using our time in the 6-1 pattern. In other words, there's a reminder here that behind all of our work and effort, God stands. And He alone can properly put into perspective our work so that we don't overly think of our work. We don't think of it too much. We don't live in it overly much, but we have it in perspective. Let me be practical about this business of working or not working on Sunday. If you now work on the Lord's Day, other than works of necessity or mercy, tell God you want to stop. And begin to make a plan for how you can do that. Secondly, think creatively about how you can avoid tasks on the Lord's Day which are dull or commonplace, particularly if they're a part of the other 6 days of labor in your life. For example, if you're a homemaker, do as little as possible of that sort of thing on the Lord's Day. You know, in traditional evangelical Christianity in America, Sunday's the day of a big family meal, which means someone at least is working very hard to prepare that meal and clean up from that meal. I would actually propose to you a different way of thinking about meals on Sunday, just for your thought that it's not a day for a big meal. It's a day for simple meals that involve a minimum of work in order to meet the necessary needs of our lives. And then third, consider whether you should do something which requires someone else to work on the Lord's Day, like shopping. More about that in just a moment. But first a word. First a word to students. What do most of you students do on Sunday? Well, you sleep till who knows when, 11, 12, 2, and then you get up and then Sunday is the big study day, right? I remember when I was in high school, college, and graduate school, Sunday was the day to really pack it in. When I went to graduate school, the seminary, the first week I was there, I heard a message in chapel about not working on the Lord's Day and the encouragement to us students not to study on Sunday. You literally had to pick up my jaw off the ground. I couldn't believe it. But I made a commitment to do it. And do you know that those 3 years of graduate school were the best student years of my life? I got the best grades I ever got. I had a great time. I learned a lot. And Sunday was a remarkable day of rest, joy with the Lord, and joy with my friends. And so sometimes I would stay up late Saturday night finishing off my studies, and then I would put them aside for an entire day and not return to them until Monday morning. And it made all the difference. When I went to Charlottesville, Virginia, to begin a church there among students at the University of Virginia, I began to teach the students in our church that they should keep the Sabbath day by not studying on the Sabbath day. And do you know what happened? Their jaws dropped to the floor. And when they picked them up again, and when some of them started doing it, and then more of them started doing it, and more of them found that keeping the Sabbath was a delight and not a chore, but it was the delight of their lives. Do you know what happened? In the mid-1980s, there were hundreds of students at the University of Virginia keeping the Sabbath. And do you know what happened? A revival happened on the campus at the University of Virginia. Because a revival among God's people has always been characterized by a new attitude toward delight on this day. And my deepest desire for us as a church is that we would grab a hold of these truths and we would begin to see revival break out in our own hearts, both as a result of a new attitude towards the Lord's Day and as a consequence of that revival, a new attitude would spread even further among us about this day. So it's the Lord's Day, and it affects the way we think about work. Very quickly, it also is a day where we must think about something about worship. The Lord's Day is set apart. It's holy for something special. What is that? It's not a day to be idle. No activity. What activity should most characterize this day? In the New Testament, what activity characterized the Lord's people on the Lord's Day? Well, they got together for worship. For fellowship, for enjoying one another. What most characterized their day was that they came together to worship God publicly. Jesus appears 11 times between his resurrection and his ascension. 6 of those times are ascertainable and fixable in terms of the day. All of them were on Sunday. And all of them were characterized by the people of God gathering together to worship him. Is a day of the week in which, in the New Testament, repeatedly, Christians come together for baptism, the Lord's Supper, for the teaching of the Word, for fellowship. The heart and soul of the church is worship. Whether it's 1 hour and 5 minutes, like we do it here, or 2 hours and 45 minutes, like they do it down at West Dallas Community Church. Either way, the larger catechism speaks of making worship our delight. To spend, as it says there, much of our day in public and private exercises of worship. There is a priority to worship above all else. And you know one of the signs of revival that might be just beginning, just tiny little signs of it beginning among us? Is that since this church was founded 6.5 years ago, a number of you have changed the way you spend Sunday. You used to go away for long weekends where you would enjoy a lake house or a place to be away. And do you know what is wonderful? Is seeing how many of you come back on Saturday. I am astounded and I am delighted to see that whether you come back or whether you worship where you are, you make worship the priority of this day. The Lord's Day is set apart, not for work, but for worship. And then finally, it is also a day in which we must speak of the wonder of it, and specifically our wonder at God's working in us. The Lord's Day is a day when the Lord works in us. The set apartness of the Sabbath is to provide a particular time in which God purposes to work in our lives. John Calvin put it this way. On the seventh day, believers ought to lay aside their own works to allow God to work in them. And Exodus 31 spells this out. In Exodus 31, it says this. Then the Lord God said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, you must observe my Sabbaths. This will be a sign between me and you for the generations to come, so that you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy." It is the Lord who makes us holy. And keeping the Sabbath is a sign of being the covenant people of God. But by keeping the Sabbath, the Lord promises that He will make us holy, that He will draw us more closely to Himself, that He will make us more totally His. So positively speaking, the Lord's Day is to be used for those special activities which enhance the wonder of belonging to our great covenant-keeping God. And sometimes that means public worship, certainly most of all, as we said, but it also means private worship, and it also means the enjoyment of friends who gather together, yes, for meals, but also for walks, or for picnics, or maybe for tossing the football in the park, but who gather together to enjoy the Lord together on His day. Let me make some final suggestions, not so much to quantify what you must do, but to just be stimulation to your thinking. First, think positively about what to do on this day. Remember, the Sabbath is a delight. The emphasis is not on what I can't do, but what I can do, what this day gives me the opportunity to do. Walks with my family, reading together, picnics, etc. Evaluate, secondly, the activities that you do on Sunday against the primary purpose of the day. It's a holy day to the Lord. So a businessman who gardens or goes jogging or even watches a little football might be appropriate and restful on the Lord's day. Even letting your son go to baseball practice might be appropriate if it does not interfere with the primary purpose of the day. The question is, what psychologically competes with the primary purpose of the day in your mind and heart? And therefore, I must gently ask this question. Is it the best and highest use of this day for you to sit isolated before a square rectangle and watch 3.5 hours of television in order to extract 60 minutes of football? All by yourself, essentially alone. Even if there's other people there, it's primarily an individual activity. You knew I was going to say it. I just want you to think about it, really. And that leads on to the next thought. Resist legalism about defining precisely what you may or may not do. One man's rest is another man's work. And allow for people to grow in this area. But also, many of us need to allow the freedom for some who have more firm notions than we do to exercise their notions and their freedom. Let me read to you the testimony of one friend of mine. Several years ago, I went to worship in a small Presbyterian church in Venice, Florida. Afterwards, two couples took me out to eat. I didn't say anything to them, but when it came time to order, I declined. They asked if I was fasting, and I said no, and I would explain later. After they ate, I explained that I did not want to impose my convictions on them, but that I just didn't believe in eating out on Sunday. I wanted to spend time with them, so I was willing to go in, but I couldn't go further and eat as well. 2 years later, I met one of the couples again, and the husband excitedly shook my hand and said, "I just wanted you to know that you saved my life." He then went on to tell me about how he had been working 16 to 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, and had developed bleeding stomach ulcers and was ruining his family and was literally working himself to death. After our meeting, he began to take Sunday off, and it made all the difference in the world. His health improved. His family began to have time together. And most importantly, the lordship of Christ in this one area established the principle of lordship in his heart, and it extended to every area of his life. You see what the Lord wants? He wants you to make him the Lord of your time, the Lord of all of your days, not just one, but all of them. And the way you do that is by making him most of all and first of all the Lord of the one day. But to show you that this issue is complex and to give you fodder for thinking, I make this point. I deeply respect this man's testimony and what he did personally in his decision not to eat out on Sunday. But we must remember this. We cannot impose Sabbath keeping, which is a covenant ordinance, an ordinance for the people of God, right? For us. We cannot impose that on a non-Christian culture. And therefore, for us to protest open restaurants on Sunday, I think is misguided. And actually, I would suggest to you that the whole enterprise of blue laws, which has a very significant history in our country, may be misguided as well. You see, it's one thing for the restaurant to be open. It's another thing for you to decide to eat in it. Do you see the difference? It's worth thinking about. Well, finally, remember again this the central truth that we come back to. It's the Lord's Day. It belongs to Jesus. It's a day of gladness and triumph on which the Lord broke the bonds of grief and abolished death and brought life and immortality to light. And because it's the Lord's Day and because it's the day of His triumph, not just over the grave, but also the day of triumph and the final grand finale of history, the Sabbath rest becomes for us, week by week, the promise of that greater future rest that God has in store for the people of God who will one day rest from all their toil and all their labor. Hebrews 4:9, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. Every Sunday is a reminder of the beginning. God created the world. He's got you and me in His hand. He's got everything in His hand. He created this world, and as He created it, He ended and capstoned His creation with rest. It's a reminder of the middle of time, the central point of history in which Jesus died in space and time and rose again to new life on the Lord's Day. And it's a reminder of the great ending of history, when all things will be consummated in and for the Lord, and there will be a rest for the people of God forever and ever. Remember, the full blessing belongs to us, and that we will one day enjoy yet a fuller and more delightful day. A day in which we shall fully delight ourselves in the Lord. When Isaiah said, we shall feed upon the inheritance of Jacob, and we shall ride on the high places of the earth.